This is Audible.
Penguin Audio presents James and the Giant Peach by Roald Dahl, read by Julian Reinstadt.
Until he was 4 years old, James Henry Trotter had a happy life. He lived peacefully with his mother and father in a beautiful house beside the sea. There were always plenty of other children for him to play with, and there was the sandy beach for him to run about on and the ocean to paddle in. It was the perfect life for a small boy. Then, one day, James's mother and father went to London to do some shopping, and there a terrible thing happened. Both of them suddenly got eaten up, in full daylight, mind you, and on a crowded street, by an enormous, angry rhinoceros which had escaped from the London Zoo. Now this, as you can well imagine, was a rather nasty experience for two such gentle parents. But in the long run, it was far nastier for James than it was for them. Their troubles were all over in a jiffy. They were dead and gone in 35 seconds flat. Poor James, on the other hand, was still very much alive, and all at once he found himself alone and frightened in a vast, unfriendly world. The lovely house by the seaside had to be sold immediately, and the little boy, carrying nothing but a small suitcase containing a pair of pyjamas and a toothbrush, was sent away to live with his two aunts. Their names were Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker, and I'm sorry to say that they were both really horrible people. They were selfish and lazy and cruel, and right from the beginning they started beating poor James for almost no reason at all. They never called him by his real name, but always referred to him as "You disgusting little beast," or "You filthy nuisance," or "You miserable creature." And they certainly never gave him any toys to play with or any picture books to look at. His room was as bare as a prison cell. They lived, Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker, and now James as well, in a queer ramshackle house on the top of a high hill in the south of England. The hill was so high that from almost anywhere in the garden, James could look down and see for miles and miles across a marvellous landscape of woods and fields. And on a very clear day, if he looked in the right direction, he could see a tiny grey dot far away on the horizon, which was the house that he used to live in with his beloved mother and father. And just beyond that, he could see the ocean itself, a long, thin streak of blackish blue, like a line of ink, beneath the rim of the sky. But James was never allowed to go down off the top of that hill. Neither Aunt Sponge nor Aunt Spiker could ever be bothered to take him out herself, not even for a small walk or a picnic, and he certainly wasn't permitted to go alone. "The nasty little beast will only get into mischief if he goes out of the garden," Aunt Spiker had said. And terrible punishments were promised him, such as being locked up in the cellar with the rats for a week, if he even so much as dared to climb over the fence. The garden, which covered the whole of the top of the hill, was large and desolate, and the only tree in the entire place, apart from a clump of dirty old laurel bushes at the far end, was an ancient peach tree that never gave any peaches. There was no swing, no seesaw, no sandpit, and no other children were ever invited to come up the hill to play with poor James. There wasn't so much as a dog or a cat around to keep him company. And as time went on, he became sadder and sadder, and more lonely. And he used to spend hours every day standing at the bottom of the garden, gazing wistfully at the lovely but forbidden world of woods and fields and ocean that was spread out below him like a magic carpet. 2. After James Henry Trotter had been living with his aunts for 3 whole years, there came a morning when something rather peculiar happened to him. And this thing, which, as I say, was only rather peculiar, soon caused a second thing to happen, which was very peculiar. And then the very peculiar thing, in its own turn, caused a really fantastically peculiar thing to occur. It all started on a blazing hot day in the middle of summer. Aunt Sponge, Aunt Spiker and James were all out in the garden. James had been put to work as usual. This time he was chopping wood for the kitchen stove. Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker were sitting comfortably in deck chairs nearby, sipping tall glasses of fizzy lemonade and watching him to see that he didn't stop work for one moment. Aunt Sponge was enormously fat and very short. She had small piggy eyes, a sunken mouth, and one of those white flabby faces that looked exactly as though it had been boiled. She was like a great white, soggy, overboiled cabbage. Aunt Spiker, on the other hand, was lean and tall and bony, and she wore steel-rimmed spectacles that fixed onto the end of her nose with a clip. She had a screeching voice and long, wet, narrow lips, and whenever she got angry or excited, little flecks of spit would come shooting out of her mouth as she talked. And there they sat, these two ghastly hags, sipping their drinks and every now and again screaming at James to chop faster and faster. They also talked about themselves, each one saying how beautiful she thought she was. Aunt Sponge had a long-handled mirror on her lap, and she kept picking it up and gazing at her own hideous face. "I look and smell," Aunt Sponge declared, "as lovely as a rose. Just feast your eyes upon my face. Observe my shapely nose. Behold my heavenly silky locks. And if I take off both my socks, you'll see my dainty toes. But don't forget," Aunt Spiker cried, "how much your tummy shows." Aunt Sponge went red. Aunt Spiker said, "My sweet, you cannot win. Behold my gorgeous curvy shape, my teeth, my charming grin. Oh, beauteous me, how I adore my radiant looks, and please ignore the pimple on my chin." "My dear old trout," Aunt Sponge cried out, "your only bones and skin. Such loveliness as I possess can only truly shine in Hollywood," Aunt Sponge declared. "Oh, wouldn't that be fine? I'd capture all the nation's hearts. They'd give me all the leading parts. The stars would all resign. I think you'd make," Aunt Spiker said, "a lovely Frankenstein." Poor James was still slaving away at the chopping block. The heat was terrible. He was sweating all over. His arm was aching. The chopper was a large, blunt thing, far too heavy for a small boy to use. And as he worked, James began thinking about all the other children in the world and what they might be doing at this moment. Some would be riding tricycles in their gardens. Some would be walking in cool woods and picking bunches of wild flowers. And all the little friends whom he used to know would be down by the seaside, playing in the wet sand and splashing around in the water. Great tears began oozing out of James's eyes and rolling down his cheeks. He stopped working and leaned against the chopping block, overwhelmed by his own unhappiness.
"What's the matter with you?"
Aunt Spiker screeched, glaring at him over the top of her steel spectacles. James began to cry.
"Stop that immediately and get on with your work, you nasty little beast," Aunt Sponge ordered.
"Oh, Auntie Sponge," James cried out, "and Auntie Spiker, couldn't we all, please, just for once, go down to the seaside on the bus? It isn't very far, and I feel so hot and awful and lonely.
Why, you lazy good-for-nothing brute!
Aunt Spiker shouted.
Beat him!
Cried Aunt Sponge.
I certainly will!
Aunt Spiker snapped. She glared at James, and James looked back at her with large, frightened eyes.
I shall beat you later on in the day when I don't feel so hot,
she said.
And now get out of my sight, you disgusting little worm, and give me some peace.
James turned and ran. He ran off as fast as he could to the far end of the garden and hid himself behind that clump of dirty old laurel bushes that we mentioned earlier on. Then he covered his face with his hands and began to cry and cry. 3. It was at this point that the first thing of all, the rather peculiar thing that led to so many other much more peculiar things, happened to him. For suddenly, just behind him, James heard a rustling of leaves, and he turned round and saw an old man in a funny dark green suit emerging from the bushes. He was a very small old man, but he had a huge bald head and a face that was covered all over with bristly black whiskers. He stopped when he was about 3 yards away, and he stood there leaning on his stick and staring hard at James. When he spoke, his voice was very slow and creaky.
Come closer to me, little boy, he said, beckoning to James with a finger. Come right up close to me, and I will show you something wonderful.
James was too frightened to move. The old man hobbled a step or two nearer, and then he put a hand into the pocket of his jacket and took out a small white paper bag.
You see this?
He whispered, waving the bag gently to and fro in front of James's face.
You know what this is, my dear? You know what's inside this little bag?
Then he came nearer still, leaning forward and pushing his face so close to James that James could feel breath blowing on his cheeks. The breath smelled musty and stale and slightly mildewed, like air in an old cellar.
Take a look, my dear,
he said, opening the bag and tilting it towards James. Inside it, James could see a mass of tiny green things that looked like little stones or crystals, each one about the size of a grain of rice. They were extraordinarily beautiful, and there was a strange brightness about them, a sort of luminous quality that made them glow and sparkle in the most wonderful way. The old man whispered,
"Listen to them move."
James stared into the bag, and sure enough, there was a faint rustling sound coming up from inside it. And then he noticed that all the thousands of little green things were slowly, very, very slowly, stirring about and moving over each other as though they were alive.
There's more power and magic in those things in there than in all the rest of the world put together,
the old man said softly.
But what are they?
James murmured, finding his voice at last.
Where do they come from?
Ha-ha!
The old man whispered.
You'd never guess that.
He was crouching a little now and pushing his face still closer and closer to James until the tip of his long nose was actually touching the skin on James's forehead. Then suddenly he jumped back and began waving his stick madly in the air.
Crocodile tongues, he cried. 1,000 long, slimy crocodile tongues boiled up in the skull of a dead witch for 20 days and nights with the eyeballs of a lizard.
and the fingers of a young monkey, the gizzard of a pig, the beak of a green parrot, the juice of a porcupine, and 3 spoonfuls of sugar. Stew for another week, and then let the moon do the rest. All at once, he pushed the white paper bag into James's hands and said,
Here, you take it. It's yours.
4. James Henry Trotter stood there clutching the bag and staring at the old man.
And now, the old man said, all you've got to do is this. Take a large jug of water and pour all the little green things into it. Then, very slowly, one by one, add 10 hairs from your own head. That sets them off. It gets them going. In a couple of minutes, the water will begin to froth and bubble furiously. And as soon as that happens, you must quickly drink it all down, the whole jugful, in one gulp. And then, my dear, you will feel it churning and boiling in your stomach, and steam will start coming out of your mouth, and immediately after that, marvellous things will start happening to you, fabulous, unbelievable things. And you will never be miserable again in your life, because you are miserable, aren't you? You needn't tell me. I know all about it. Now off you go and do exactly as I say, and don't whisper a word of this to those 2 horrible aunts of yours, not a word. And don't let those green things in there get away from you either, because if they do escape, then they will be working their magic upon somebody else instead of upon you. And that isn't what you want at all, is it, my dear? Whoever they meet first, be it bug, insect, animal, or tree, that will be the one who gets the full power of their magic. So hold the bag tight. Don't tear the paper. Off you go. Hurry up. Don't wait. Now's the time. Hurry! With that, the old man turned away and disappeared into the bushes. 5. The next moment, James was running back towards the house as fast as he could go. He would do it all in the kitchen, he told himself, if only he could get in there without Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker seeing him. He was terribly excited. He flew through the long grass and the stinging nettles, not caring whether he got stung or not on his bare knees, and in the distance he could see Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker sitting in their chairs with their backs towards him. He swerved away from them so as to go round the other side of the house. But then, suddenly, just as he was passing underneath the old peach tree that stood in the middle of the garden, his foot slipped and he fell flat on his face in the grass. The paper bag burst open as it hit the ground, and the thousands of tiny green things were scattered in all directions. James immediately picked himself up onto his hands and knees and started searching around for his precious treasures. But what was this? They were all sinking into the soil. He could actually see them, wriggling and twisting, as they burrowed their way downward into the hard earth. And at once he reached out a hand to pick some of them up before it was too late. But they disappeared right under his fingers. He went after some others, and the same thing happened. He began scrabbling around frantically in an effort to catch hold of those that were left. But they were too quick for him. Each time the tips of his fingers were just about to touch them, they vanished into the earth. And soon, in the space of only a few seconds, every single one of them had gone. James felt like crying. He would never get them back now. They were lost, lost, lost forever. But where had they gone to? And why in the world had they been so eager to push down into the earth like that? What were they after? There was nothing down there. Nothing except the roots of the old peach tree, and a whole lot of earthworms and centipedes and insects living in the soil. But what was it that the old man had said? Whoever they meet first, be it bug, insect, animal or tree, that will be the one who gets the full power of their magic.
Good heavens, thought James. What is going to happen in that case if they do meet an earthworm, or a centipede, or a spider? And what if they do go into the roots of the peach tree?
Get up at once, you lazy little beast!
A voice was suddenly shouting in James's ear. James glanced up and saw Aunt Spiker standing over him, grim and tall and bony, glaring at him through her steel-rimmed spectacles.
Get back over there immediately and finish chopping up those logs, she ordered.
Aunt Sponge, fat and pulpy as a jellyfish, came waddling up behind her sister to see what was going on.
Why don't we just lower the boy down the well in a bucket and leave him there for the night, she suggested. That ought to teach him not to laze around like this the whole day long.
That is a very good wheeze, my dear Sponge, but let's make him finish chopping up the wood first. Be off with you at once, you hideous brat, and do some work.
Slowly, sadly, poor James got up off the ground and went back to the woodpile. Oh, if only he hadn't slipped and fallen and dropped that precious bag. All hope of a happier life had gone completely now. Today and tomorrow and the next day and all the other days as well would be nothing but punishment and pain, unhappiness and despair. He picked up the chopper and was just about to start chopping away again when he heard a shout behind him that made him stop and turn. 6.
Sponge! Sponge! Come here at once and look at this!
At what?
It's a peach!
Aunt Spiker was shouting.
A what?
A peach! Right up there on the highest branch! Can't you see it?
I think you must be mistaken, my dear Spiker. That miserable tree never has any peaches on it.
There's one on it now, Sponge. You look for yourself.
You're teasing me, Spiker. You're making my mouth water on purpose when there's nothing to put into it. Why, that tree's never even had a blossom on it, let alone a peach. Right up on the highest branch, you say? I can't see a thing. Very funny. Oh, good gracious me. Well, I'll be blowed. There really is a peach up there.
A nice big one, too,
Aunt Spiker said.
A beauty! A beauty!
Aunt Sponge cried out. At this point, James slowly put down his chopper and turned and looked across at the two women who were standing underneath the peach tree. Something is about to happen, he told himself. Something peculiar is about to happen any moment. He hadn't the faintest idea what it might be, but he could feel it in his bones that something was going to happen soon. He could feel it in the air around him, in the sudden stillness that had fallen upon the garden. James tiptoed a little closer to the tree. The aunts were not talking now. They were just standing there, staring at the peach. There was not a sound anywhere, not even a breath of wind. And overhead, the sun blazed down on them out of a deep blue sky.
It looks ripe to me,
Aunt Spiker said, breaking the silence.
Why don't we eat it?
Aunt Sponge suggested, licking her thick lips.
We can have half each. Hey, you, James, come over here at once and climb this tree.
James came running over.
I want you to pick that peach up there on the highest branch,
Aunt Sponge went on.
Can you see it?
Yes, Auntie Sponge. I can see it.
And don't you dare eat any of it yourself. Your Aunt Spiker and I are going to have it between us right here and now, half each. Get on with you. Up you go.
James crossed over to the tree trunk.
Stop!
Aunt Spiker said quickly.
Hold everything!
She was staring up into the branches with her mouth wide open and her eyes bulging as though she had seen a ghost.
Look!
She said.
Look, Sponge! Look!
What's the matter with you?
Aunt Sponge demanded.
It's growing!
Aunt Spiker cried.
It's getting bigger and bigger!
What is?
The peach, of course.
You're joking.
Well, look for yourself.
But my dear Spiker, that's perfectly ridiculous. That's impossible. That's... Now wait just a minute. No. No. That can't be right. No. Yes. Great Scott! The thing really is growing.
It's nearly twice as big already,
Aunt Spiker shouted.
It can't be true.
It is true.
It must be a miracle.
Watch it, watch it.
I am watching it.
Great heavens alive,
Aunt Spiker yelled.
I can actually see the thing bulging and swelling before my very eyes.
7. The two women and the small boy stood absolutely still on the grass underneath the tree, gazing up at this extraordinary fruit. James's little face was glowing with excitement. His eyes were as big and bright as two stars. He could see the peach swelling larger and larger as clearly as if it were a balloon being blown up. In half a minute, it was the size of a melon. In another half minute, it was twice as big again.
Just look at it growing, Aunt Spiker cried.
Will it ever stop?
Aunt Sponge shouted, waving her fat arms and starting to dance around in circles. And now it was so big, it looked like an enormous butter-coloured pumpkin dangling from the top of the tree.
Get away from that tree trunk, you stupid boy!
Aunt Spiker yelled.
The slightest shake and I'm sure it'll fall off. It must weigh 20 or 30 pounds at least.
The branch that the peach was growing upon was beginning to bend over further and further because of the weight.
Stand back!
Aunt Sponge shouted.
It's coming down! The branch is going to break!
But the branch didn't break. It simply bent over more and more as the peach got heavier and heavier. And still, it went on growing. In another minute, this mammoth fruit was as large and round and fat as Aunt Sponge herself, and probably just as heavy.
It has to stop now, Aunt Spiker yelled. It can't go on forever.
But it didn't stop. Soon, it was the size of a small car and reached halfway to the ground. Both aunts were now hopping round and round the tree, clapping their hands and shouting all sorts of silly things in their excitement.
Hallelujah!
Aunt Spiker shouted.
What a peach! What a peach!
Terrifico! Aunt Sponge cried out. Magnifico! Splendifico! And what a meal!
It's still growing! I know, I know!
As for James, he was so spellbound by the whole thing that he could only stand and stare and murmur quietly to himself. Oh, isn't it beautiful? It's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Shut up, you little twerp!
Aunt Spiker snapped, happening to overhear him.
It's none of your business!
That's right!
Aunt Sponge declared.
It's got nothing to do with you whatsoever. Keep out of it.
Look!
Aunt Spiker shouted.
It's growing faster than ever now. It's speeding up.
I see it, Spiker. I do, I do.
Bigger and bigger grew the peach. Bigger and bigger and bigger. Then at last, when it had become nearly as tall as the tree that it was growing on, as tall and wide, in fact, as a small house. The bottom part of it gently touched the ground, and there it rested.
"Well, it can't fall off now,"
Aunt Sponge shouted.
"It's stopped growing,"
Aunt Spiker cried.
"No, it hasn't. Yes, it has. It's slowing down, Spiker, it's slowing down. But it hasn't stopped yet. You watch it."
There was a pause.
"It has now."
"I believe you're right.
Do you think it's safe to touch it?"
"I don't know. We'd better be careful."
Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker began walking slowly round the peach, inspecting it very cautiously from all sides. They were like a couple of hunters who had just shot an elephant and were not quite sure whether it was dead or alive. And the massive round fruit towered over them so high that they looked like midgets from another world beside it. The skin of the peach was very beautiful, a rich buttery yellow with patches of brilliant pink and red. Aunt Sponge advanced cautiously and touched it with the tip of one finger.
"It's ripe," she cried. "It's just perfect. Now look here, Spiker. Why don't we go and get a shovel right away and dig out a great big chunk of it for you and me to eat?"
"No," Aunt Spiker said.
"Not yet." "Why ever not?"
"Because I say so."
"But I can't wait to eat some,"
Aunt Sponge cried out. She was watering at the mouth now, and a thin trickle of spit was running down one side of her chin.
"My dear Sponge,"
Aunt Spiker said slowly, winking at her sister and smiling a sly, thin-lipped smile.
"There's a pile of money to be made out of this, if only we can handle it right. You wait and see."
Eight. The news that a peach almost as big as a house had suddenly appeared in someone's garden spread like wildfire across the countryside. And the next day, a stream of people came scrambling up the steep hill to gaze upon this marvel. Quickly, Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker called in carpenters and had them build a strong fence around the peach to save it from the crowd. And at the same time, these two crafty women stationed themselves at the front gate with a large bunch of tickets and started charging everyone for coming in.
"Roll up! Roll up!"
Aunt Spiker yelled.
"Only 1 shilling to see the giant peach.
Half price for children under 6 weeks old,"
Aunt Sponge shouted.
"One at a time, please. Don't push. Don't push. You're all going to get in."
"Hey, you, come back there. You haven't paid."
By lunchtime, the whole place was a seething mass of men, women and children, all pushing and shoving to get a glimpse of this miraculous fruit. Helicopters were landing like wasps all over the hill, and out of them poured swarms of newspaper reporters, cameramen and men from the television companies.
"It'll cost you double to bring in a camera,"
Aunt Spiker shouted.
All right," they answered. "We don't care."
And the money came rolling into the pockets of the two greedy aunts. But while all this excitement was going on outside, poor James was forced to stay locked in his bedroom, peeping through the bars of his window at the crowds below.
"The disgusting little brute will only get in everyone's way if we let him wander about,"
Aunt Spiker had said early that morning.
"Oh, please," he had begged. "I haven't met any other children for years and years, and there are going to be lots of them down there for me to play with, and perhaps I could help you with the tickets."
"Shut up,"
Aunt Sponge had snapped.
"Well, Aunt Spiker and I are about to become millionaires, and the last thing we want is the likes of you messing things up and getting in the way."
Later, When the evening of the first day came and the people had all gone home, the ants unlocked James's door and ordered him to go outside and pick up all the banana skins and orange peel and bits of paper that the crowd had left behind.
"Could I please have something to eat first?" he asked. "I haven't had a thing all day."
"No!"
they shouted, kicking him out of the door.
"We're too busy to make food. We're counting our money."
"But it's dark," cried James.
"Get out,"
they yelled,
"and stay out until you've cleaned up all the mess."
The door slammed. The key turned in the lock. 9. Hungry and trembling, James stood alone out in the open, wondering what to do. The night was all around him now, and high overhead, a wild white moon was riding in the sky. There was not a sound, not a movement anywhere. Most people, and especially small children, are often quite scared of being out of doors alone in the moonlight. Everything is so deadly quiet, and the shadows are so long and black, and they keep turning into strange shapes that seem to move as you look at them, and the slightest little snap of a twig makes you jump. James felt exactly like that now. He stared straight ahead with large, frightened eyes, hardly daring to breathe. Not far away, in the middle of the garden, he could see the giant peach towering over everything else. Surely it was even bigger tonight than ever before. And what a dazzling sight it was! The moonlight was shining and glinting on its great curving sides, turning them to crystal and silver. It looked like a tremendous silver ball lying there in the grass, silent, mysterious, and wonderful. And then, all at once, little shivers of excitement started running over the skin on James's back. "Something else," he told himself. "Something stranger than ever this time is about to happen to me again soon." He was sure of it. He could feel it coming. He looked around him, wondering what on earth it was going to be. The garden lay soft and silver in the moonlight. The grass was wet with dew, and a million dewdrops were sparkling and twinkling like diamonds around his feet. And now, suddenly, the whole place, the whole garden, seemed to be alive with magic. Almost without knowing what he was doing, as though drawn by some powerful magnet, James Henry Trotter started walking slowly towards the giant peach. He climbed over the fence that surrounded it and stood directly beneath it, staring up at its great bulging sides. He put out a hand and touched it gently with the tip of one finger. It felt soft and warm and slightly furry, like the skin of a baby mouse. He moved a step closer and rubbed his cheek lightly against the soft skin. And then suddenly, while he was doing this, he happened to notice that right beside him and below him, close to the ground, there was a hole in the side of the peach. 10. It was quite a large hole, the sort of thing an animal about the size of a fox might have made. James knelt down in front of it and poked his head and shoulders inside. He crawled in. He kept on crawling. "This isn't a hole," he thought excitedly. "It's a tunnel." The tunnel
was damp and murky, and all around him there was the curious bittersweet smell of fresh peach. The floor was soggy under his knees, the walls were wet and sticky, and peach juice was dripping from the ceiling. James opened his mouth and caught some of it on his tongue. It tasted delicious. He was crawling uphill now, as though the tunnel were leading straight towards the very centre of the gigantic fruit. Every few seconds he paused and took a bite out of the wall. The peach flesh was sweet and juicy and marvellously refreshing. He crawled on for several more yards, and then suddenly, bang! The top of his head bumped into something extremely hard, blocking his way. He glanced up. In front of him, there was a solid wall that seemed at first as though it were made of wood. He touched it with his fingers. It certainly felt like wood, except that it was very jagged and full of deep grooves. "Good heavens," he said. "I know what this is. I've come to the stone in the middle of the peach." Then he noticed that there was a small door cut into the face of the peach stone. He gave a push. It swung open. He crawled through it, and before he had time to glance up and see where he was, he heard a voice saying, "Look who's here!" And another one said, "We've been waiting for you." James stopped and stared at the speakers, his face white with horror. He started to stand up, but his knees were shaking so much he had to sit down again on the floor. He glanced behind him, thinking he could bolt back into the tunnel the way he had come, but the doorway had disappeared. There was now only a solid brown wall behind him. 11. James's large, frightened eyes travelled slowly round the room. The creatures, some sitting on chairs, others reclining on a sofa, were all watching him intently. Creatures? Or were they insects? An insect is usually something rather small, is it not? A grasshopper, for example, is an insect. So what would you call it if you saw a grasshopper as large as a dog? As large as a large dog? You could hardly call that an insect, could you? There was an old green grasshopper, as large as a large dog, sitting directly across the room from James now. And next to the old green grasshopper, there was an enormous spider. And next to the spider, there was a giant ladybird with 9 black spots on her scarlet shell. Each of these three was squatting upon a magnificent chair. On a sofa nearby, reclining comfortably in curled-up positions, there were a centipede and an earthworm. On the floor over in the far corner, there was something thick and white that looked as though it might be a silkworm. But it was sleeping soundly, and nobody was paying any attention to it. Every one of these creatures was at least as big as James himself. And in the strange greenish light that shone down from somewhere in the ceiling, they were absolutely terrifying to behold. "I'm hungry," the spider announced suddenly, staring hard at James. "I'm famished," the old green grasshopper said.
"So am I,"
the ladybird cried. The centipede sat up a little straighter on the sofa.
"Everyone's famished," he said. "We need food."
4 pairs of round, black, glassy eyes were all fixed upon James. The centipede made a wriggling movement with his body, as though he were about to glide off the sofa. But he didn't. There was a long pause and a long silence.
The spider, who happened to be a female spider, opened her mouth and ran a long black tongue delicately over her lips.
"Aren't you hungry?"
she asked suddenly, leaning forward and addressing herself to James. Poor James was backed up against the far wall, shivering with fright and much too terrified to answer.
"What's the matter with you?"
the old green grasshopper asked.
"You look positively ill." "He looks as though he's going to faint any second,"
the centipede said.
"Oh, my goodness, the poor thing,"
the ladybird cried.
"I do believe he thinks it's him that we are wanting to eat."
There was a roar of laughter from all sides.
"Oh, dear, oh, dear," they said. "What an awful thought!"
"You mustn't be frightened," the ladybird said kindly. "We wouldn't dream of hurting you. You are one of us now. Didn't you know that? You are one of the crew. We're all in the same boat."
"We've been waiting for you all day long," the old green grasshopper said. "We thought you were never going to turn up. I'm glad you made it." "So cheer up, my boy, cheer up," the centipede said. "And meanwhile, I wish you'd come over here and give me a hand with these boots. It takes me hours to get them all off by myself."
12. James decided that this was most certainly not a time to be disagreeable. So he crossed the room to where the centipede was sitting and knelt down beside him.
"Thank you so much," the centipede said. "You are very kind."
"You have a lot of boots," James murmured.
"I have a lot of legs,"
the centipede answered proudly.
"And a lot of feet. 100 to be exact." "There he goes again,"
the earthworm cried, speaking for the first time.
"He simply cannot stop telling lies about his legs. He doesn't have anything like 100 of them. He's only got 42. The trouble is that most people don't bother to count them. They just take his word. And anyway, there is nothing marvellous, you know, centipede, about having a lot of legs."
"Poor fella," the centipede said, whispering in James's ear.
"He's blind. He can't see how splendid I look."
"In my opinion," the earthworm said, "the really marvellous thing is to have no legs at all and to be able to walk just the same."
"You call that walking?"
cried the centipede.
"You're a slitherer. That's all you are. You just slither along."
"I glide," said the earthworm primly.
"You're a slimy beast,"
answered the centipede.
"I am not a slimy beast," the earthworm said. "I am a useful and much-loved creature. Ask any gardener you like, and as for you..." "I am a pest,"
the centipede announced, grinning broadly and looking round the room for approval.
"He is so proud of that," the ladybird said, smiling at James, "though for the life of me I cannot understand why."
"I am the only pest in this room,"
cried the centipede, still grinning away.
"Unless you count old green grasshopper over there. But he's long past it now. He's too old to be a pest any more."
The old green grasshopper turned his huge black eyes upon the centipede and gave him a withering look. "Young fellow," he said, speaking in a deep, slow, scornful voice. "I have never been a pest in my life. I am a musician."
"Hear, hear," said the ladybird.
"James," the centipede said. "Your name is James, isn't it?"
"Yes."
"Well, James, have you ever in your life seen such a marvellous, colossal centipede as me?"
"I certainly haven't," James answered. "How on earth did you get to be like that?"
"Very peculiar," the centipede said. "Very, very peculiar indeed. Let me tell you what happened. I was messing about in the garden under the old peach tree, and suddenly a funny little green thing came wriggling past my nose.
Bright green it was, and extraordinarily beautiful. And it looked like some kind of a tiny stone or crystal.
Oh, but I know what that was, cried James. It happened to me, too, said the ladybird.
And me, Miss Spider said. Suddenly there were little green things everywhere. The soil was full of them.
I actually swallowed one,
the earthworm declared proudly.
So did I, the ladybird said.
I swallowed three,
the centipede cried.
But who's telling this story anyway? Don't interrupt.
It's too late to tell stories now, the old green grasshopper announced. It's time to go to sleep.
I refuse to sleep in my boots, the centipede cried. How many more are there to come off, James?
I think I've done about 20 so far, James told him.
Then that leaves 80 to go,
the centipede said.
22.80,
shrieked the earthworm.
He's lying again.
The centipede roared with laughter. Stop pulling the earthworm's leg, the ladybird said. This sent the centipede into hysterics.
Pulling his leg,
he cried, wriggling with glee and pointing at the earthworm.
Which leg am I pulling? You tell me that!
James decided that he rather liked the centipede. He was obviously a rascal, but what a change it was to hear somebody laughing once in a while. He had never heard Aunt Sponge or Aunt Spiker laughing aloud in all the time he had been with them.
We really must get some sleep, the old green grasshopper said. We've got a tough day ahead of us tomorrow.
So would you be kind enough, Miss Spider, to make the beds?
13. A few minutes later, Miss Spider had made the first bed. It was hanging from the ceiling, suspended by a rope of threads at either end, so that actually it looked more like a hammock than a bed. But it was a magnificent affair, and the stuff that it was made of shimmered like silk in the pale light.
I do hope you'll find it comfortable,
Miss Spider said to the old green grasshopper.
I made it as soft and silky as I possibly could. I spun it with gossamer. That's a much better quality thread than the one I use for my own web.
Thank you so much, my dear lady,
the old green grasshopper said, climbing into the hammock.
Oh, this is just what I needed. Good night, everybody. Good night.
Then Miss Spider spun the next hammock, and the ladybird got in. After that, she spun a long one for the centipede and an even longer one for the earthworm.
And how do you like your bed?
She said to James when it came to his turn.
Hard or soft?
I like it soft, thank you very much, James answered.
For goodness sake, stop staring round the room and get on with my boots,
the centipede said.
You and I are never going to get any sleep at this rate. And kindly line them up neatly in pairs as you take them off. Don't just throw them over your shoulder.
James worked away frantically on the centipede's boots. Each one had laces that had to be untied and loosened before it could be pulled off. And to make matters worse, all the laces were tied up in the most terrible, complicated knots that had to be unpicked with fingernails. It was just awful. It took about 2 hours. And by the time James had pulled off the last boot of all and had lined them up in a row on the floor, 21 pairs altogether, the centipede was fast asleep.
Wake up, centipede,
whispered James, giving him a gentle dig in the stomach.
It's time for bed.
Thank you, my dear child,
the centipede said, opening his eyes. Then he got down off the sofa and ambled across the room and crawled into his hammock. James got into his own hammock and, oh, How soft and comfortable it was, compared with the hard, bare boards that his aunts had always made him sleep upon at home.
"Lights out,"
said the centipede drowsily. Nothing happened.
"Turn out the light,"
he called, raising his voice. James glanced round the room, wondering which of the others he might be talking to, but they were all asleep. The old green grasshopper was snoring loudly through his nose, the ladybird was making whistling noises as she breathed, and the earthworm was coiled up like a spring at one end of his hammock, wheezing and blowing through his open mouth. As for Miss Spider, she had made a lovely web for herself across one corner of the room, and James could see her crouching right in the very centre of it, mumbling softly in her dreams.
"I said turn out the light!"
shouted the centipede angrily. "Are you talking to me?" James asked him.
"Course I'm not talking to you, you ass,"
the centipede answered.
"That crazy glowworm has gone to sleep with her light on."
For the first time since entering the room, James glanced up at the ceiling, and there he saw a most extraordinary sight. Something that looked like a gigantic fly without wings, it was at least 3 feet long, was standing upside down upon its 6 legs in the middle of the ceiling. And the tail end of this creature seemed to be literally on fire. A brilliant greenish light, as bright as the brightest electric bulb, was shining out of its tail and lighting up the whole room. "Is that a glowworm?" asked James, staring at the light. "It doesn't look like a worm of any sort to me."
"Course it's a glowworm," the centipede answered. "At least that's what she calls herself. Although actually, you are quite right, she isn't really a worm at all. Glowworms are never worms. They are simply lady fireflies without wings. Wake up, you lazy beast!"
But the glowworm didn't stir. So the centipede reached out of his hammock and picked up one of his boots from the floor.
"Put out that wretched light!"
he shouted, hurling the boot up at the ceiling. The glowworm slowly opened one eye and stared at the centipede.
"There is no need to be rude," she said coldly. "All in good time."
"Come on, come on, come on!" shouted the centipede. "Or I'll put it out for you!"
"Oh, hello, James," the glowworm said, looking down and giving James a little wave and a smile. "I didn't see you come in. Welcome, my dear boy, welcome. And good night."
Then, click, and out went the light. James Henry Trotter lay there in the darkness, with his eyes wide open, listening to the strange sleeping noises that the creatures were making all around him, and wondering what on earth was going to happen to him in the morning. Already, he was beginning to like his new friends very much. They were not nearly as terrible as they looked. In fact, they weren't really terrible at all. They seemed extremely kind and helpful, in spite of all the shouting and arguing that went on between them.
"Good night, old green grasshopper," he whispered. "Good night, ladybird. Good night, Miss Spider."
But before he could go through them all, he had fallen fast asleep. XIV.
"We're off!"
someone was shouting.
"We're off at last!"
James woke up with a jump and looked about him. The creatures were all out of their hammocks and moving excitedly around the room. Suddenly, the floor gave a great heave as though an earthquake were taking place.
"Here we go!"
shouted the old green grasshopper, hopping up and down with excitement.
"Hold on tight!"
"What's happening?" cried James, leaping out of his hammock.
"What's going on?"
The ladybird, who was obviously a kind and gentle creature, came over and stood beside him. "In case you don't know it," she said, "we are about to depart forever from the top of this ghastly hill that we've all been living on for